Okay. I'm Annalise Finney. I'm currently in Oakland, California, and we are recording this interview for the Oral History Summer School Education Narratives Project. Today is November 2nd, 2020, and I'm in Oakland, and I'm here with David. Excuse me, not David. Jonathan. Jonathan, do you want to just introduce yourself briefly? You can say your name, where you currently are, and then just your job.
All right, my name's Jonathan Schuler, and I'm here in Oakland as well. But my school, although I haven't been there, is in Richmond, California, and where I teach third grade.
Yep. And as we were just discussing, we're right on the eve of the 2020 election. The election has happening tomorrow, although we might not know the results for some time. And I'm curious, Jonathan, just to get started on that theme, how has the election come up in your classes at all?
It does, because actually our first unit of study in our third grade curriculum is called Government for the People. So it goes through the history. Basically, it goes through the history of people getting the right to vote. So first, in 1865, or the black males got the right to vote, and then 1920, the females, and then as it gets old, and then really nobody, well, white people are okay, but then not really till 1965 do the people get to vote. So they go through and they learn about Alice Paul and, the regulars, I'm blanking, Cesar Chavez and Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks. So like it's about, so we were talking about voting since the beginning of the year, and it's always, and there's been so much, especially here in Oakland with the riots and things like that to say that, that this is what same thing that those people went through. They're just trying to fight for their rights, and it's a long and difficult process. So that's what was our first unit. We started talking about voting, and then today I just told them that tomorrow was election day. So their streets might go a little crazy and things might get backed up, and they might see some things on the street outside, and they might want to stay inside and be cautious. But I don't know how much Richmond gets involved in those sorts of things, but so they're probably be fine.
What kind of questions were students asking you?
They just asked me who I voted for, and then they just told me who they voted for. So, we didn't really, obviously they're third graders, so they just know Trump and Biden. So that was, they just were using the chat to say who they would vote for. Because there was also part of our unit was, hold on 1 second. Mom, can you do that later? Can you do that later? Because I'm talking and she's recording it. Okay. My mom has, she's not only as she are, takes care of our 3-year-old, but she also has cancer. So we've been very, very cautious during the pandemic to not bring anything home.
I remember hearing you talk about that in your last interview.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we've been on quite a strict lockdown. And today we did go and buy food because people are telling us to buy food just in case there's trouble in the streets for the next few days. So we did. Not much has changed. Life as usual. Just stay in your house.
Do you feel like thinking about the election tomorrow has been affecting your teaching?
I don't think, like I said, I already voted so long ago that I knew who I was. I mean, like, the only thing I was thinking about this whole run-up is, like, if you didn't know who you were voting for by now, like, what, who are you? Like, who is, like, still sitting there in the middle? I mean, this is so polarized. It's like there's, like two vastly different sides. It's not like, oh, he made a good point about this, but it's like just like I don't know. And it's mostly, I guess, like about personalities and stuff more than any sort of, you know, political agenda, because, you know, you can't really set, like, who knows what Trump does? Like, he doesn't make any sense. He just says whatever's coming to his mind. I don't know what he's thinking, but it just seems like he's just off the cuff, whatever's come. So who even knows? I mean, I see his commercials. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, but anyway, so that's kind of a clue as to who I voted for.
When your students are writing in the chat who they would vote for, do students ever take issue with each other and with what they say?
It's all Biden. Nobody said. And my school's like 90% Latino, so I think they have a much more, you know, distrust for the president right now.
That makes sense. Has your school, kind of as an institution, talked with the teachers about what will happen if there's some unrest following the results?
You know, they didn't, actually. We've been going over COVID a lot, but nobody actually mentioned it. I think that maybe I think the feeling is that the area we're in is so Democrat that it's not really going to be affected much by, you know, you have to kind of have to have both sides in order for there to be some problem. So that it was, I mean, they might, if a Trump victory, there might be people in the streets protesting the victory, but there's not going to be a lot of Trump and Biden people in the same area, wouldn't think.
Is that similar to how you feel about where you're living now, as opposed to with the community that your school is in?
Yeah, I would think I mean, I don't think Richmond is as political as Oakland is. So I would expect Oakland to be a little bit more, definitely more in the streets. But, you know, the BART line goes right down there, and the people are all over the area, especially, you know, displaced people because of the housing crunch and all that stuff. So, I mean, there's tons of Oakland people probably living in Richmond and vice versa. You know, like, there's, so it's not like it's, you know, it takes me 20 minutes to get there in the car, and it's, you know, and like 20 minutes on BART. So, I mean, it's just right there.
Yeah.
And they're all going to show up if they want to.
Yeah. I'm curious. I know that your teaching background involved teaching in all sorts of different places all over the world.
Yeah.
Taught in a situation of civil unrest that you remember?
Oh, yeah. You know, when I was in Kenya, well, so the election in 2008, the Kenya elections, was like a massacre. Like they announced a winner, and then they came back and they said, no, you're not the winner. And they said the other guy was a winner, and people just went crazy. And, you know, there were still people charged. People who were running for president that the year I was there in 2010 were still people being charged at the Hague. And so, hold on 1 second, because I got a low battery thing. So,
sure, you need to plug in.
I want to make sure it's charging.
Sure. Are you on a laptop or on a phone?
I'm on a phone.
Okay.
I didn't know. I didn't know if I would. Oh. Okay. Sorry. I didn't know if I would need to move around because the house was still in unrest at the moment.
Speaking of unrest.
Yeah. So. The elections for, it was 2012. The elections came around and there was lots, you know, they didn't know what was going to happen. So they sent all of the teachers away it was right at spring break, or they moved spring break up and they said, okay, you guys leave. And then if everything's okay, we'll call you and you can come back. So we were exiled. We went down to Cape Town, South Africa and spent the week in a winery. And then they said, call first before you come back. So we called and they said, no, it's fine. Everything went okay. And so then we went back to Kenya. So that was, and also in Thailand, the Reds come up every once in a while. And they were mad about something, and there was army trucks all over the streets watching for, because they have like a, Thailand's divided into like a red working class party and a yellow royal party, and the Reds were in a state of, they you probably remember, they blocked off the airports and everything, the protesters did. We've been in a few.
And those, in both of those circumstances, did you, I don't know, did you see your students kind of reacting differently or taking in the information in a different way?
The Thai people are kind of used to it. It happens maybe once every 2 years. Mm-hmm. But Kenya was pretty, and around Kenya is really tense because the 2008 election was so bad and so bloody, and they didn't know, you know, if that would happen again. And another thing was, is that the police and the military were so preoccupied with the elections that the criminal element felt like they had free rein. Like, during like the lead up to the election, like about 2 weeks before, like three or four of my kids got carjacked and they got their computers stolen and their backpacks. And then lots of crimes around the school and around, because it's a private school, right? So they're pretty wealthy and everybody knows where they're at. So, you know, just you just wait down the block. The police are busy making sure the rioters aren't coming or whatever, or nobody's taking to the streets, so they there was a lot of, the crime rate rose dramatically. And I don't know if it was all around Kenya, but definitely in our neighborhood and in Nairobi and definitely at the school. So yeah, that was really tense.
Yeah. So how are you feeling about what's gonna happen after this?
You mean after somebody wins, or think in the next few days?
Yeah.
I mean, I know that people are taking to the streets for just to be there. I've already got the text messages and posts about where to show up and how to find a rally near you and all those things. So. It's guaranteed they're going to be out, whether they're going to be causing trouble or not, or something's going to go wrong. So, I mean, I'm anticipating that, you know, as much as, you know, there's talk that everything is going to go relatively smoothly. Okay. I mean, there's going to be some outbursts and there's going to be a lot of screaming and yelling, but I don't think there's going to be reason to, maybe the National Guard, but I don't think they're gonna have to deploy any troops. That's my guess.
Yeah. Is there any kind of local election issues that you're keeping track of that would affect your school or the way that you teach?
Not my school, the way that I teach. I think it was, and see, now you're catching me off guard because I did a lot. Is it 15, the one that's supposed to give money to schools?
Yes.
Yeah, so we all, I mean, of course, my wife's a teacher too, so we both went 15, you know, hoping that we can get some funding for our schools. But I don't know that any of the other ones would, I mean, nothing really affects my teaching, but could affect the way the schools, you know, are paid, or we could affect the way we're paid, I guess, but, you know, like, every election we go to the polls, we're, you know, trying to get more money for schools, and, you know, it just doesn't happen. So, you know, there, and then, but every time, you know, it's a flawless. There's no loopholes in this one. Like, yeah, right. Okay. So when if we at least see it, we'll vote for it. And then if we see it, that's great. And if we don't, we'll just carry on.
I can understand that. I'm curious if you feel like there are things that you don't want to talk to your students about, kind of the election and everything that's been going on in the world outside of coronavirus.
I'm pretty upfront with them about this stuff. I don't really go into my politics that much, but I do explain what's going on and why it's happening. And of course it's from my point of view because I'm talking, but I never share what a Republican person in Texas might be thinking. I don't really know, but they're listening to me so that they get to hear what I have to say. And if they want to listen to someone else, they can go figure out what they have to say too. So I'm there, I get paid to be there, and I get paid to teach them what I know, and this is what I know. So that's what they get. It's one-sided, but as far as straying from off topic, I don't bring anything up that it's not already pretty much widely known, and we'll talk about whatever it is. Like we talked about the mistreatment of people by the police, of course, because we were also looking at Cesar Chavez and Martin Luther King and even Alice Paul and Susan B. Anthony, and they're always getting arrested and hurt and battered by the police. So we talked about all that stuff and obviously the pandemic and how it spreads and all the things that you need to know about it. So I haven't really called off any topics as far as that goes, or any topics.
What have your students' questions been about police brutality?
We haven't really had to get too much into it because they don't really ask that much. I mean, I know, like, I'm not sure about this group of students, but I know last year one of my students' dad went to jail like right maybe in the middle of the year. And so like that was it. And so that was, dealings with the police. I'm sure that a lot of my kids have siblings or relatives of some sort that have been arrested or something, but nobody really came out to talk about any of it. So I guess it was kind of the beginning of the year too, so maybe they hadn't really warmed up that much as far as that went.
That makes sense. I'm curious if much has changed in the way that your school has been approaching coronavirus just in the last month since we last spoke with you.
I think during the summer and last spring, we definitely had, academically, there's been a major shift from last spring was very relaxed. And then this one was much more formal and trying to get get real good content and good skills to the students instead. It's like scaled down. So we're like trying to pull standards that we feel are more important and, focus on I had parent-teacher conferences today, so I've been talking about all these, pulling things that are important and then just focusing heavily on those instead of like skipping around like we could in class because we could go from one thing to the next. But it's going slower, but they're getting a good understanding of what we would, of the skills they're expected to have in third grade. And so I think I don't think they're going to be lost like they missed a year. They're going to be, maybe stronger in some parts and maybe not have as much exposure as they would have if they were at school, but those other things can be, caught up on as far as that goes.
Was that issue of falling behind something that parents raised today?
They were all very relaxed. I know because when I was talking to the interviewer the last time, I was saying how, you know, it wasn't really bothering me that much, that it was like, you know, it was annoying to not be around my kids and not to, you know, do the things that I normally do and have to figure out how to get around it and how to, you know, switch things so that it's more, so that it's, that you could use it, do it digitally or do it from distance learning. But, and I've done that. So, but then with like 2 days or 3 days later, like we had a staff meeting and man, like everybody was, all the other teachers were so upset and the parents were calling in and the principal couldn't handle all the calls because everybody was calling in because the parents were all upset. But, and I don't know, I mean, it's just depends on, you know, people and such and stuff, but like my parents haven't really had much to say about it. And I talked to like six of them today and they're like, oh yeah, we get it. This is how you have to live right now. And someday it will be done and we'll go back to normal or go back to, you know, life as it was before or closer to life as it was before. So, yeah. And, cause I was checking in on them too. I wanted to, you know, ask them about, cause it's hard to gauge the students as far as how they're feeling, like, you know, about the whole thing, because you can just kind of see their face and, like they show up every day. They stay the whole time. Like some teachers are saying that they would leave it like whenever they want. They would show up whenever they want. I haven't had any of those troubles. And so I got like a really good class or I don't know. We were doing something like every 2 weeks, we would give them paperwork. So like the parents would come in and drop off a folder and we'd give them a new folder. So we would have, they have like written work. So there, it's like half the stuff they do digitally and the other half the stuff. They learn the lesson, of course, through Zoom, but they write it on paper and they can like read the book and write down the main idea and stuff like that. So all the parents, like this last time, like every single parent showed up. So usually I have, I would have like one or two. And so I'd have to post the PDFs online so they could do it online. But this time every single one showed up. And then I realized that, well, if I could do it every 2 weeks, you know what? Like I could do it every month and just get a bigger packet. So I plan for, you know, a couple of weeks ago till the fall break. And then I'm going to make another packet so that it could go fall break till Christmas. And then, I mean, we're hoping that after in the new year, people come back, but we don't know. And then what form, because it looks like, you know, everybody's backsliding.
Yeah,
definitely backsliding. Europe is having a very hard time with their reacting to their backsliding.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if we have to do it, we're already so far in. Like at first it was like, okay, if it's over by Thanksgiving, and then you're like, what if it's over by Thanksgiving, then why not just wait till after Christmas? Cause we're going to have them come back. But, then, you know, hopefully. So anyway, otherwise we could just do this the whole year and they're used to it and they'll get better. And the other thing we were discussing was like this sort of both me and my wife both saw like these students who started off really strong in distance learning and now they're starting to teeter off. And then the ones who started off really weak and now they're starting to get engaged. So it's like this sort of crisscross where like the students who couldn't get to do anything are now like ready and starting to do everything. And the students who used to do everything are like starting to slack off. So it's been kind of a weird little recent curve of activity.
Why do you think that crisscross is happening?
I think that the students who started off strong, we're just, you know, thinking like, okay, we're going to do this for a little while, then we'll go back. And then maybe the thought that it's not coming back made them like sort of, you know, veer off course. Maybe they were working really hard, trying their hardest. And then they realized, you know, that they could get away with a lot more stuff. So they, you know, start, you know, hiding hiding stuff or not finishing stuff. And then the other class, maybe they thought that this was going to be over soon, so they didn't even bother. And then they realized, okay, it was not going to end, so we better, you know, straighten up. Some, like I had one of my kids today, I had his mom, and she actually, during the class, she brought him to the Zoom, and he was crying. And I was like, why are you crying? And she's like, because I was away from Zoom and I was playing games. His mom caught him and brought him back. And he did nothing. So, and he was always disappearing. And like, it was like his Zoom was on, but like you couldn't really see him. I could see like the tip of his head or whatever. And then, so he was behind on everything. And I was talking to her mom, and she's like, oh, and all of a sudden, like, I just saw just waves of his work just started coming in. And she called me, and she's like, oh, how can he turn in his work? He hasn't done anything. I was like, just take a picture of it, have him do it, take a picture of it and send it through the dojo. And then I can see it. Cause last week I was doing grades, and I was telling him, like, if you don't have this in, you're not going to get a grade for it. And then, so that really sped him up. And then for the last couple of weeks, he's been answering questions in class and reading, volunteering to read and, you know, chiming in. I was like, and so I was talking to her today and telling her what a good job she did to get him into gear. And she's like, yeah, I took his game away. he's like, he hasn't seen it for 2 weeks and you might not see it. It's like, there you go. Motivation. So, people are working together and trying to get it right. And, you know, they're young, so you know, they're going to be doing different things. So yeah, I'll end up talking to all the parents this week sometime, so they'll get a good understanding of what, you know, because like even really we didn't like, I mean, they put out report cards and, you know, we didn't really have an understanding of what should, I mean, how do you give them a grade? I mean, you don't even know who did the work or anything, because some kids have people at home, some kids don't have people at home. Like, you know, it's just, they can look up everything on the internet. I mean, especially the math problems. Like, it's just simple math you could do on a calculator if you want. But, and then like that same thing with the drop system, it takes so long to get the papers that like by the time you get the papers, what they were filling out and stuff is so far behind that you know it's like, oh, remember like 3 weeks ago when you missed, you were reading this, well, this should have been the topic, you know. How are you gonna bring that up, you know? So that kind of hurts. But so I didn't really know what to expect from grades, so I just, you know, basically it's just on effort and energy and you know, turning in your work and, you know, keeping up and, you know, not super scientific, just really like observational.
Did your school give you guidance on grading, or was that something that you were allowed to kind of come up with on your own?
They didn't give any guidance. We have like this infinite campus, like this campus system where you plug all their grades in and they want to see like four grades put in per week or something, because now the parents can see it. So they want to see, you know, you can kind of track their progress. And I guess that's fine. And I have stuff like that because I try to do like a digital exit ticket every day. So it kind of keeps them up to date. They are on websites where they work on stuff like math, where they do it on Prodigy, which is like a game-based math program. So I could check how much time they spent there. I can check on, you know, different things where it logs them in. I can see how many books they read on certain sites per week and stuff like that. So, I mean, just to, you know, especially for the loafers, just to know that everybody's watching and we can see what you're doing and make sure that you're trying to keep up and, you know, trying to inspire them to try their best, even though, you know, it's kind of a weird situation. We have a mindful coach that comes in on Wednesday. So we have Mindful Life Project, from Richmond comes in, and she has a coach that does a lesson We have an SEL lesson from a school counselor every Tuesday. She reads a book, and then on Thursdays they do like an activity about the book. So trying to keep them, you know, give them ways of coping with situations and things like that to, you know, keep them, give them some way of dealing with stress if it happens to come upon them. But so far, I mean, I had 6 today out of 27, and no one was, some of them were missing their friends, but no one was really, you know, having very difficult issues with, like, you know, crying or throwing things or outbursts or something. So
these were issues that the parents said that they were, like, they were seeing in the kids.
There wasn't any of those. I haven't talked to them all yet, but so far it was, seems like everybody understood this, the circumstance, and was just gonna go make the best of it.
Yeah. I'm sorry, would you mind just putting, maybe propping up your phone on something? I can just hear it when you switch hands, I think.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no problem.
Cool. You're also, if it's not a good place to put it, you're also welcome to just turn off the video for now. We can turn it back on later.
Ooh. Okay. Well, I'm going to, so you don't look at the top of my head.
I feel like I'm looking at that kid you described who you could only see the top of their head on Zoom. Yeah.
Exactly. It's weirder than him not being there at all.
That makes sense. Also, just wanted to make sure I understood one thing. When you said that there's an SEL teacher, that's socio-emotional learning teacher?
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. I just wasn't sure. I wanted to make sure I understood correctly. I was curious about one thing. You were saying that, like, some of this crisscross seems like it's from kids getting a little bit burned out with the potential that they're going to be there for a long time when maybe that wasn't what they expected. And I'm curious how that's feeling for you. I think before, in the other interview, you had expressed that, you know, this is hard to sit and look at a screen all day and have this new interface that isn't really what you signed up for. And I'm curious how you're feeling about kind of this potential second wave and more time in this setup.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely like some weeks it's just brutal. Like, it's definitely wearing me out. Because, you know, when you're teaching a lesson to the kids, especially to kids, like, you gotta, like, move stuff around on the screen, and then you have all the Zoom stuff that's open, and, like, you're trying to move the toolbar, and then you're trying to move the annotation bar, and then there's the window that they're looking through. Oh, like, all the windows are there, and, like, it's like this constant juggling. And then, you know, when you use one thing, like, well, the annotator, I guess, is my biggest problem. You try to annotate something, and then you go to, like, switch, move the page, and then it doesn't move, and then you have to turn off the annotator to get back to the cursor. So it's like all these steps, and it just gets so frustrating, because then you want to click over to another page and back, and then you're just, it's just, it seems like whatever you want to read or whatever you want to focus on, there's a bar right in front of it. I think it's fine. I don't think they see any of that stuff, but I see it all, and it annoys me.
Yeah. You said it's wearing you out. How do you kind of see that manifesting in your life?
Just muttering to myself about the, you know, about the tools as I'm trying to deal with them, or just, you know, like, taking deep breaths every time I realize that there's another bar in front of what I need to read or focus on, and where do I put the bar now so that it goes out of my way. Or then, you know, like, they have the stop thing where, like, it's got all the tools on it, like the chat box and everything, and then, like, it's got a little crossed so that you can move the whole thing, and, like, you know, sometimes, like, that cross thing just won't appear, and, like, you can't move it, like, why doesn't it just come up? And that's also very frustrating. So, I mean, it's just that little stuff. It's all, you know, annoying, but it's nothing. It's just annoying, I guess, is the final difficult.
Yeah. Are you able to get kind of support from other teachers? What is your relationship like at the moment with your coworkers?
We have a grade level meeting every Friday. We have staff meetings every Friday. We have PDs. Because our Friday is our short day, so we get out at 12:30. And then that 12:30, like 1 to 4 is supposed to be, you know, even during the regular year, that 1 to 4 is for staff meetings and PDs and stuff. So, you know, we see each other every week and we discuss all the same thing and talk about, you know, how you're doing this and sharing websites and sharing, you know, different approaches and how to deal with certain technical problems or just student problems. So I think as far as that goes, we keep in contact with each other pretty well.
How does it compare to the relationships you had with your coworkers before COVID-19?
It's kind of hard to say because, like, well, we have 3 streams. So there's a 3A, a 3B, and a 3C, and I'm the 3B teacher. And for the last couple years, there was a 3A teacher, but she moved on to a different school. And then the 3C has never, like, it had 2 different teachers. So, like, I have both my colleagues are new to me. So it's definitely different because I don't really know them that well. And so it's, you know, it's harder to be, you know, we don't have the same rapport as I did with the older teachers.
Yeah.
And one of them, like, the teacher at 3A is brand new, like just out of college. This is her first job. So it's a lot of questions need to be answered.
Yeah. What is it like to be on the receiving end of those questions right now?
I think it's fine. Like, I never think about that stuff. And because it's been so long since I've had to. And so I just went, oh yeah, I remember. And I also thought that, you know, it's kind of, I don't know if it's easier. Because usually your biggest problem as a first year teacher is your classroom management. And of course, classroom management is much easier when everybody's at home and they have mute buttons. I mean, maybe they won't be engaged as much as they would be in class, but you don't have kids, you know, throwing stuff at each other or yelling at each other or, you know, anything like that. So it's kind of a way to, you know, focus actually just on your teaching and less on, you know, how to keep the class under control.
Yeah. That sounds like a really different teaching experience to be learning teaching via Zoom versus teaching in a classroom.
Yeah, but next year, so like, especially because of the curriculum, you know, because you're trying to deal and get the curriculum out. So like, once you have a year under your belt, like the next year, the curriculum will be pretty much, you know, pretty well solid for you. And then you can really just focus on your classroom management, if that's the thing. And so it might work out to be advantageous for her.
Yeah, I can see how that maybe would be if you could have the first year of learning the curriculum with mute buttons.
Yeah, and you get to deal with the students and stuff, but just not so in your face.
Yeah. So it sounds like both of the teachers that you're working with in your stream are relatively new. What is it like to not have kind of those more experienced teachers right alongside you during this time?
You know, even the teacher I worked with the 2 years before, that was her first job too. So she was super independent. She never asked any questions. And she actually had a friend, another teacher, and they were really good friends. So she always went to that lady to ask her for questions. So she never did really bother or talk to me about that stuff, so I didn't have to answer any questions. But they're both new, and then, you know, they both don't know how the school works, so they don't, you know, so they have a lot of questions just about that. They had a whole bunch, even our principal is brand new, so nobody really knew how to communicate with her. And then, you know, they were setting up emails via Zoom or whatever, so like some emails were getting sent to some people but not to others, especially the new people would get like, they would get like teacher emails, but they wouldn't get school emails. So like, so I think they figured all that stuff out. So before I was like having to forward them all the messages to make sure that they got the messages and keep them up to date with everything that was happening, just to make sure that they were in the know about what was going on, because they weren't getting all the information. I think that they've caught up on that. So it's been a lot quieter. Everybody's, you know, really in a groove and just kind of moving along.
Before, when you were describing that meeting where a bunch of teachers were talking about kind of having struggles with their classes, is there kind of is there a feeling of solidarity among the teachers around stuff like that, or is it feels a little bit more distanced in this type of teaching environment?
I think that the teachers are in tune with each other. I think it's just, you know, because everybody has a different class and each class has a different makeup, it's hard to like, you know, it's hard to, I mean, hard to figure out like, you know, what's going to work for one person isn't going to work for another person. So, you know, trying to fix those things and, you know, say like, give options. You could tell people what you do, but that's not necessarily going to help. And I think so we also, you know, because the younger you get, the harder it is, because the more parents have to be involved. So I think a lot of the hardships was coming from the younger grades, like the kindergarten and the first grade and the second grade, because, you know, you really have to have a parent there to help them get through everything. So then you have the parent involved, and then that adds a whole nother dimension of problems, not only from, you know, not only from the parent helping the student too much, or the parent not understanding what to do so that the student can keep up, or, you know, trying to talk to one student without, you know, without every parent knowing that student, you know, and you can see like, is the rambunctious one of the bunch, right? So like everybody in my house knows who my kid is, like they hear his name like 10 times a day. Turn your camera on. Where are you going? Open your book. and like you can't really, you know, in the classroom you can kind of just say it and then everybody thinks you're talking to them, but on Zoom it's kind of like you kind of have to say their name so they know that you're talking to them. Or there's other way, you know, like you can tap on their table or something, but it's more, you know, calling out names and stuff like that. I feel more than usual. And so yeah. I can imagine that anybody who's got their kids on Zoom can hear about, you know, whoever I'm talking to at the time about getting ready and getting back on track and all that stuff. So, you know, you don't have that much privacy and your name is getting slandered around everybody's house.
Yeah. I'm curious, one thing I've been thinking about is kind of the different learning spaces that people are in now, and I wonder if you could describe just how your classroom was laid out and what it was like physically before you went into distance learning.
So I always set my classes up in groups, so they would have been in groups of it depends on the number of students. Like, I mean, ideally I have, you know, four, five groups of four, but, you know, that doesn't happen not very often in California schools. So, but they still stay in groups of about four. Sometimes if it's a, you know, factor of three, they'll be in groups of three. So, but no more than that. And then I used the groups, the group dynamic to encourage good behavior. So like they don't get individual points, or they don't get marked down. They don't get marked down really. But the groups get positive points for doing things correctly. So if they get their books out and are ready to go first, then their group's going to get a point. So then, you know, they have all that. So I don't usually deal with each student so individually as I do now, because I have, they're all kind of, they're supposed to, the idea is that they're supposed to monitor themselves because they want to win the points. I mean, and for third graders, it usually works. And then of course, you know, like in every class, there's 3 to 5 kids who know nothing applies to them. So then you have to, you know, then you just handle them on their own. So they, yeah, they would have been sitting in table groups and working together, hopefully. And there would have been a lot more turn and talks, because we can't really do any of that. Like, they have breakout rooms, but by the time you set up the breakout room and send everybody to the breakout room and come back from the breakout room, and then like it's just a mess. I do use the breakout room, but only I pull groups by myself. I pull them to the breakout room, and then we do reading or whatever, and then we come back to the main room.
How would you have done that in your classroom?
So yeah, in my classroom, like I have the little kidney-shaped table, and then I pull the group I want to the kidney-shaped table, and then I have the other students are either, you know, at their desk doing something or reading on the carpets, you know, because they'd be all, they're all organized into groups as far as like reading groups or math groups. I don't usually do math groups, I do reading groups. So, you know, I'd have struggling readers and then high readers and then, you know, the middle, and they would each be doing different things while I would read with the different groups. So, so it's kind of like maybe a little bit like stations. They would each have a task to do, and you know, you get them used to it, and so then they can do it pretty well. It's not really perfect, but it, you know, it's effective.
Yeah. That sounds like it would be effective to me as a third grader. I'm curious about like what is your classroom like? Like when you walk in, what is it? Is it an old building? Is it a newer building?
It's a super pretty school. I think it used to be the Chevron headquarters or something. But like when you walk out the doors to the playgrounds, like there's a soccer field, and then there's all these like the bars and stuff, you know, with the jungle gyms they play on. And then when you get to the end of the playground, it's part of the national park, but then all in front of you is just the bay, and the bridges and the city are all just spread out right in front of you. So it's right on the water. Like if you're on one side of the school, the marina is out your window. So all the harbor, with all the boats and everything, it's just sitting right there. So no, but it is like then on the negative side, it's a office building, definitely an office building and not a school. So there are some, you know, the classrooms, you probably wouldn't design classrooms like that for a school, but for an office, I guess they would work. So, you know, it's like teaching in a really big office.
I'm having trouble picturing that. Like what in the way that it's laid out makes it more like an office building?
There's all like in the, you know, like when you're walking down the halls, there's lots of windows. So like you can see everything. The one, like on my one side of my class that faces the street, it's all glass. So like it's just all windows. So you can see the parking lot, you can see everything that's going on out there. And I mean, that's, you know, I don't have to tell you how many times I have to, you know, call people back from just staring out the window at. And then sometimes there's actually weird stuff going on in the parking lot. So, you know, like that kind of distraction. Like we had this crazy seagull, and this crazy seagull would just come up to the window and just peck at it. and again and again and again, and it was like it was possessed or something, and people would, it would freak everybody out because it would just sit there and just doof, doof, doof. So like, I don't think you would don't want the kids to have that big a field of vision. You kind of want to have, you know, walls and like, you want windows, of course, so they can, and there's no air, there's no fresh air because those windows, of course, don't open. So, you know, you'd want more wall space for sure. And then the rooms, like, they have weird, like at the edges, they have these like kind of cutouts. So they have like this kind of awkward space that you don't really know what to do with. And I don't know what the office people did with it either, but it's just kind of bizarre. And then, you know, like, it's just, I don't know, there's just difference between like the, it's all carpeted with like that sort of industrial office carpet. Just things like that.
Are there ways that the classroom has been made to feel a little bit more classroomy?
I don't know, but I think like most of the kids go there from the beginning, so that's just what a school looks like to them, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's not, I mean, I guess if you don't really have a good impression of what the office is like, you probably would just not really notice it that much, but it kind of stands out to me. But it's not, because I've also been taught in a few office buildings, because they open schools in strange places in foreign countries. So, you know, they want a school downtown, there's no school there, so they just lease an office building and they make that into their school. So that does happen. So, yeah, but the playground and everything is awesome. The classroom itself, I mean, the functionality of the classroom is pretty cool, because like they have one giant wall, it's just a magnetic whiteboard. So, and then they have a projector on the ceiling. So like your whole wall is basically like a screen that you get to work on. So, and you can, you know, use magnets and put little posters and everything all over the wall. So that's actually pretty cool.
Oh, that sounds really cool. Do you miss teaching there?
I do. You know, like actually I started to, I kind of go on and off, but like I would just walk around the block to give the impression like I was leaving my house to go somewhere to come to school. So like, it gives you that feeling of the morning air or something, just wakes you up in a way that doesn't happen if you don't do it. Maybe it's also probably, you know, the exercise of walking. But so I would just take a walk around the block and I'd be like, okay, I'm going to school. Like when I get back, I'll take off my daddy hat and put on my teacher hat, and then I'll be ready for school. Actually, one day, 2 weeks ago, I went to the school to drop off all the papers. Like I was telling you, I gave them a folder today and they gave me their work, and I forgot my computer at the school. So in the morning I had to drive to Richmond, pick up my computer. And then I was thinking if it was too late, I would just stay at the school and teach, because some teachers can do that. But then I was like, I had enough time. So I came back and I thought, man, this is so ridiculous. Like if it was, like getting to school for me takes 20 minutes because there's no traffic going from Oakland to Richmond. But the traffic coming from Richmond towards San Francisco and Oakland is horrible. So there would be no way in a regular year that I could have done that, because I wouldn't have made it back through the traffic coming the other way. But with nobody going to work or whatever, it was wide open. And then that really felt like I went to school, because I drove all the way there and I drove all the way back. Ready for school.
What is the space in your home where you teach like?
So like I said, we have two teachers, so I kind of got the raw end of the stick. It's fine, but like I'm in the front room, the living room, and I have this little desk that a friend of mine gave me a long time ago that was never meant to be a teaching desk at all, or a work desk of any sort. It's kind of like a little like roll top desk where you could, you know, store stuff so it's not sitting on the table or whatever. So like I have to use one. Another thing that might be driving me crazy with the Zoom is that I have to, there's not enough space on the right hand side of my desk to use the mouse, so I have to use my mouse with my left hand. So like for the last 3 months, my left hand is getting very good at, you know, I'm going to be ambidextrous by the end because I have to use my left hand to do all the mouse stuff. And so yeah, but basically the desk is too small. And then because if I don't, and my computer stinks, it's like, if you don't use the mouse, you have to use the little mouse on the front of it. Like the pages get bigger and smaller all of a sudden, and then things open up for no reason, and all kinds of, you know, and it free, like, I don't know, it just does a bunch of weird stuff. So I have to use the mouse. I have to use the mouse with my left hand because that's the only place I have. And it's got a designated IP or something like that, so it has to be plugged in to a cable. So like the Wi-Fi doesn't really work. So I'm just stuck in the little space, but. Uh-huh. So that could also be a cause for frustration. I don't have the proper tools. But by now, you know, it's so now I'm kind of used to it, but it's, and then so like, since I'm in the front room, like you can hear the kitchen. So there's stuff in the, if anybody goes to the kitchen to make lunch or make food or get stuff, and then, you know, that's noise in the background. My daughter of course wants to come out here, but we have little gates to keep her kind of locked in the back room. So she stays back there. And with Grammy, and she's got access to the backyard area too, so they can go outside and they can play around, and she's got everything in her room. And then my wife is in our bedroom, and she's got her desk and her whiteboard set up in there too. So everybody's got their little sections, but yeah, we all get to, you know, we have, you know, the cool thing is that we do have, you know, way more time with everybody because we are not at different schools, we're at home. So like at recess, we go and hang out with Grammy and Nora and we play, and then we come back and teach, and then we all eat lunch together. So those things are nice.
Yeah. I'm curious, is the room that you're in right now the front room?
Yeah.
You're at school right now.
Yeah, well, I tried to start off on the couch, but, and then I totally forgot that, you know, you can't just hold your phone like that forever. It just, yeah, you can do it. And so, yeah, that was a bad idea. But because I was afraid that, because it was so early, I was afraid that I was going to have to move around because, you know, they would be getting ready for bed or moving from place to place, so I didn't, but she decided to go to bed early, so that kind of ended that. So it's been very quiet.
Yeah. Is that rare in your house?
My daughter does not like to nap, so she runs herself ragged. So then around 4 o'clock, she just starts just doing random stuff because she's exhausted, but she won't go to sleep. And then at 5 o'clock, it's too late for her to go to sleep because then she'll be up until whenever. So we just have a whole bunch of cool down things for her to do. So like, she doesn't really nap, but she just kind of sits and takes it easy for a while.
I'm sorry, I missed that. What do you call it?
We call it cuddle time.
Oh, cuddle time.
Yeah, so when she starts throwing stuff around and just grabbing stuff and, you know, kind of like a hurricane, we go, oh, it's cuddle time, and then we just sit down with her. She, whatever she does. We sing songs and talk and read books.
Are you done with work by 4, usually?
What's that?
Done with school by 4?
We're done at school at 1:40.
Wow. I'm sorry, what were you gonna say?
We start at 8:30 and we get 8:30, we have a half an hour recess and we have an hour lunch and we're done at 1:40.
Is that, what time would you have been done if you were at school?
3:30.
Wow.
So we have shorter days. So it's, but the thing that's different, I mean, I don't know, like my wife's school did it completely different, but our school said you had to have 240 minutes of live time with the kids. And so that works out to the 240 minutes. And so then after like 1:40, I leave them with stuff to do for their asynchronous work, I guess it's called, where they do the work at home. But not 2 hours worth, just maybe like a half hour to an hour's worth. But after like being on the, cause so I'm on the screen for like, you know, about 4 hours or whatever, just, so it's a long time.
Yeah.
And they are definitely burnt by the end of the day. They go, I know for a fact that they get right off of their Zoom and they go and they plug in their PlayStation or whatever they do and start, you know, gaming, I'm assuming, but like, it's like, dude, how can you look, I can't even look at a screen.
Yeah.
I'm walking away.
I've noticed that we're about up to an hour, so I want to finish up soon, but I did want to ask, I'm curious, in not wanting to look at screens at outside of work time, have any of your personal habits changed?
I definitely don't. I definitely tinker around on the computer like I would before. But also, it's changed my work habits a bit because I don't, like, after being on the Zoom with them for 4 hours, like, I don't want to go back and, like, enter stuff into grade books. I don't want to, like, you know, write lesson plans because I've already been on the computer long enough and, like, that's just added time on the computer that, you know, normally that's what I would do. But now it seems so tedious because we have to, you know, get back on the computer and do it some more and then answer all the emails and check all the digital work that they did. So that part, I think, is, you know, it's just like you've already spent enough time on this computer and you just want to not do it anymore.
So what do you do instead?
I put it off until I absolutely have to do it, and then I go ahead and do it. I also do a lot of it, like, I would just kind of do it in the afternoons or in the evening, but instead I do it in the morning before I start. So, like, I get out, I don't really get out at 1:40 because I always have to answer emails and stuff from the school and from everybody else to, and then, so I have, but, you know, basically, you know, about 2:30 or so I'm done. And then, like, I don't look at my work computer for sure until the next day, hopefully. Unless, because I can also, I can answer the dojo things on my phone, so sometimes I'll do that, but usually I just get up in the morning and start working there.
I get that dojo is an interface on the computer, but what, could you give me a little bit of a description of what it is?
So it's called Class Dojo, and usually we use it for classroom management. So each kid has an avatar, and like if they answer a question, you can give them a point. You can make groups with it. So I make groups, and then I give the groups the points, like I was talking about earlier. But you can also, it's a good, great way to communicate with parents because all the parents are connected. They can actually see how many points their kids get if they're interested in that. So it does both. Like it monitors your classroom, and then it also, there's lots of things on it. Like there's like a timer on it. There's a random picker. There's mindfulness and all kinds of social and emotional learning little videos you can do. We did those earlier in the year. And then what they added since COVID is they had this thing called a portfolio. And then on the portfolio, you could do all kinds of activities. Like you can post a worksheet, like a PDF, and they can get a text box and actually fill in a PDF and turn it in. They can do, like there's a writing one where you can ask a question and they can write their answer in. There's drawing, so I could say, you know, like we were talking about, what's the beast inside you look like when you get angry? So they went to the drawing thing and they drew a picture of their internal beast when they get angry, and then they turned that in. So like they've added a bunch of stuff to it. It's pretty effective as well. And then everybody can see it, and the parents can see it, what they did and what they didn't do. So it's cool.
Wow. That sounds like a cool piece of tech.
Yeah, it's for elementary schools. I think everybody at our school probably has it. And you could even link to the other teachers and all that stuff too. So you can get, you know, like we have a PE teacher, so he could send messages to the kids through there as well. So yeah, it's been definitely very helpful for this time. And that they added all those little features in that portfolio was really helpful. Then the kids can do everything in one place.
So before we wrap up, I just wanted to ask if there's anything from the time between your last interview and now that you would just like to document by having said here. Is there anything you want to have on the record, either something that stuck out to you from this period of time or something that you want to make sure you remember in the future? Feel free to raise it now.
The only thing that really stuck out to me was how, like, last time when I was giving the interview and I felt like, you know, everything was going on and going smoothly and we're moving slowly but getting through everything, it was just going to be just fine. And then to go to the meeting and have everybody say, like, oh, this is terrible, what is going on, everybody's complaining. I thought that's so weird because I was just talking about how, you know, it's not as good as being at school, but everything's going fairly smoothly, and apparently for other people it's really not. So that was one of the things I thought was strange.
Yeah, it almost highlights how separate people's worlds are right now, just because.
Because you don't really know how everybody else is doing. I think because if my little group was having a lot of trouble, then like the third grade team was having trouble, then maybe it would have been more apparent to me. But when it's other grades and my grade's pretty much doing what they want and enjoying it, so we're just sticking with it.
Yeah. Do you think before distance learning, you would have known if other grades were struggling?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think so, because, you know, then you have, like, you're in the lunchroom, they're talking about it. You're in the copy room, they're talking about it. You're on recess duty or whatever, or line, you know, lining up to come in and go out for whatever reason. And then all the teachers are there, and there's always gabbing and gossip going around. So you get a better, stronger feel. You can see people are upset or, you know, that it seems to be. And then even before and after, because, like, after school, we have to go take all of our kids out to the front of the school, and then we wait with them while their parents pick them up. So then there's a lot of, especially a lot of talking there, because the whole day's gone through, and, you know, and so you, you know, express your discontent of the day or share stories and stuff like that. So yeah, there's definitely a lot more, you know, impromptu talking when you're all at the same place than having to go and write a special email or send a special text, especially because nobody wants to get a text or an email. Even like, even our, you know, principal keeps sending this, like, feel good emails, and like, you send me, you're the principal, I have to open the email to see if it's something, and it's, and thank you for hoping I'm doing well, but I would rather just not open the email. I would, like, rather not have to check it, and that would make me happier. So it's just stuff like that, you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Jonathan.
You got it.
I'm just going to pause the recording, but I'll still be here, okay?
Okay.